You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of my best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in today's episode, I want to talk about the idea of moving in silence. And in case you haven't, you know, come across the term before, it simply means going about the business of achieving your goals without like telling people, without telling your friends, without telling your family, without announcing it to the general public. And, you know, there's many benefits to moving in silence, but the main thing is one, to sort of like prevent yourself from burning out, because often, and I fall and prey to this, sometimes like the satisfaction of telling somebody, like a good friend who hypes you up and makes you feel excited about your goals, sometimes it almost feels as good as accomplishing the thing itself. And then secondly, sometimes when you tell people for all kinds of reasons, they can kind of be instrumental in you not achieving your goals, which is what I'm going to talk about in the episode. And I've really thought about the reasons why we go about telling people about our plans, because, you know, I'm definitely the kind of person who historically would have done that, or, you know, to some extent still does it, but I'm really trying to conquer this, I would call it a vice this year. And some of the reasons why we tell people our plans are easily enough to understand. Like, they're very human reasons. Sometimes it's just because we need support. So we have got a great idea. Maybe it's to start like a charity or start a business or to lose weight or insert whatever sort of just like goals that people set for themselves. And you share with the people you care about and the people who care about you, because sometimes you're looking for their moral support. Other times you're looking for their guidance. Other times you're looking for financial support. So in the example of like when you're starting a business, or let's say you're planning on going back to school. And then other times you just want somebody to sort of like help flesh out your ideas and make your ideas even better. Other times it's kind of a way of you creating like public accountability. So when you haven't told people about your goals, the only person who's holding you accountable to those goals is really you, because only you know about it. But the minute you share that with somebody, you kind of feel like you're going to feel more pressure to like actually go ahead and do that thing, because otherwise it's like embarrassing. You know, depending on how close you are to the person, like usually with friends and family, it's like low level of embarrassment, because ultimately they love you and they won't hold it against you. But when you tell people with like, with whom you have looser social connections, you kind of feel it's going to like, you're going to lose face, or it's going to be more embarrassing. So sometimes we share ideas because it's almost like we're cementing the fact that we're going to go ahead and actually do the thing that we've said. Another reason I think a large segment of people, myself included, fall into this category, we're doing it because we're looking for validation. We want somebody to say, hey, that's a great idea, like keep going. Or we want somebody to like give us praise, like to tell us like, that's a fantastic idea, you know, that's going to do well. Or to just generally be impressed that you've done something. And this desire to get that secondary level of validation I just spoke about, like the getting the praise and like sort of the kudos and the pat on the back, it's kind of like trying to get unearned praise in a way, because you're not getting praise in that moment for having accomplished that thing. You're getting praise because people are impressed with your ambition or the goal that you've set yourself. And this is very dangerous, because this superficial gratification can sometimes trick you into feeling like you've done that thing itself. So it's sort of like when you sit down and you talk at length with your best friend about a business idea that you have, and you can go into tremendous detail about where it's going to be, who the target audience is, what the returns are going to be. Sometimes, like, especially when you're a pat on the back driven person, or a validation or a praise driven person, it can, like I said, almost feel as good as getting the thing itself. And because you were partly at least like doing that thing because of the validation you're going to get once it's accomplished, you've kind of already achieved that goal already. You've already got the validation and the pat on the back and the praise. So sometimes it can sort of like remove the air from, or remove the steam from the momentum of what you are trying to achieve. So validation is like a major component of why people share goals prematurely. Now, I've had the experience of sharing goals and receiving like a varied response from people. I've received positive feedback, like the kinds of positive feedbacks I've just spoken about. So the validation, the guidance, the support, and that always feels amazing, which is why people do it over and over again. But I've also received what I would categorize as sort of like ambivalent responses. So, you know, when you share something that you're excited about and then you're met with a lackluster or a tepid or a like lukewarm response. And I think there can be a couple of reasons for this ambivalence. And now I'm not talking about negative. I'm talking about like ambivalent, lackluster responses. I'm going to cover a negative after this. But in terms of ambivalence, sometimes it can come from the fact that like we can be personally excited by something and something can matter to us greatly, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to matter to other people. Like an example is like during the crypto craze, I had a friend who was really excited about crypto, like talked about crypto all the time, invested in lots of coins, and was really like a proselytizer for the virtues of crypto. And what he was increasingly frustrated by was the fact that he was recommending crypto and telling people about how fantastic crypto is and how it could be like the key to their financial liberation. And the people he was telling this to, his friends, his colleagues, the people he came across with, just like were like giving him the time of day in the sense that they would listen to him. They would even seem excited, but they never followed through. So he would come back to them like a month later or a few months later. And it would turn out they hadn't invested any money at all. And he was really, like, really aggravated by this. And what I had to remind him was that, again, like, just because something matters to you doesn't mean that it's going to matter to somebody in the same way. And an example that he could relate to is, for example, when Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door on a Saturday and they knock on your door and they're always so lovely and positive and enthusiastic and they ask you if you've heard about the good news. And you know, even people who are religious, even Christians, like often don't receive them well. Like they often don't invite them in to talk about like their religious texts or to hear the good news. They often like kind of, you know, basically like thank them and bid them well on their journey. So the same attitude that he would have to Jehovah's Witnesses is kind of like the same attitude that people had with his crypto, in that just because he was personally excited and moved and passionate about something, it doesn't mean that that translates to other people. Like people have different priorities. So sometimes when you share something great, some great news, some great idea, like the lackluster response is simply a function of the fact that people, it doesn't matter to people that much. They care about you, so they're hearing you talk things out, but they're not necessarily going to contribute to energizing you about your idea because, again, it doesn't matter to them. The second thing I can think about in terms of ambivalence is, you know, it's when you have a bad track record of like not accomplishing the things that you set out. So let's say you tell your friends and family that you're going to lose weight this year. Like this is the year you're going to lose weight. You're going to lose 20 pounds. You're going to get in great shape. You're going to become a runner. You're going to go to the gym every day. If this is the first time you've done it, yeah. Like chances are they're going to be supportive and excited and hype you up. But if this is like your 100th attempt at trying to like shift that 20 pounds, chances are they're not going to be like excited or give you a lot of energy. They're going to give you ambivalence because again, like once bitten, twice shy. And if you've kind of not let them down, because ultimately it shouldn't affect them on a personal level, whether you lose weight or not, but they're not going to have the same level of enthusiasm at your 100th attempt as they did for your first attempt. So sometimes it's just like your own fault. Like you've disappointed them. You haven't achieved your goals multiple times. And now they're kind of like dubious about you. And also as a side note, I've definitely been guilty of this, where I have started like what I think is going to be like my next like get rich quick scheme. And I'm super excited about it. I share it. And then guess what? Like a few months down the line, I've lost momentum and I'm like, well, maybe like my candle business isn't going to be what's going to make me a millionaire. And then I stop. And, you know, when I go back with my next idea, like whatever that idea is, chances are people are not going to be as excited or as supportive as they were when I first brought up the first business idea, because again, there was no follow through. So that's an example of the ambivalence being on us, really. Also, on a pettier level, it makes me think of all the times I've said that I'm going to get locks and that I'm going to write a book. I have literally said this since I was 16. And here I am at the tender age of like 32, and I still haven't done it. So at this stage, I feel ashamed to even mention these things to my friends and family, because again, I've said it so many times, and I can only expect to be met with ambivalence, really. Now, outside ambivalence and positivity, like, the third category is obviously when you share an idea or your thoughts or your dreams or your goals or your objectives, and then you're met with negativity. And especially when this negativity comes from people who either you love and care about, or people who you yourself have like supported in the past. So when they've come to you and they've expressed a dream or a hope or a goal or an objective, you've like filled their cup with joy and support and enthusiasm. Like, it hurts like extra bad when you're met with this negative like response from them. And when I think about the various reasons why people meet your goals and dreams or just like aspirations with negativity, there's many reasons. One of those reasons is, I kind of feel like sometimes it's a reflection of the fact that they themselves are not capable or are not like easily able to dream. And by that I mean, like, instead of them focusing on all that things could be, so instead of focusing on all the things that could go right and how things could work out and how things could basically materialize as you envision them, like, their de facto position or the way their minds work is that they focus on all the things that could go wrong with your dreams, you know? And when people are like this, often, like, the motivating factor or the thing that's driving them is because they're a fear-based person, or they're like a risk-averse person. And this usually, like, this risk aversion and this like fear-based way of thinking that sort of limits their capacity to dream big is often reflected in their everyday life. So they're the kind of person where even in everyday like small things, like, their de facto position is how things are going to go wrong. Like, that's just, they've got a negativity bias. I think that's what the term would be. And that negativity bias is driven by their own incapacity to see things as half full or to see things as most of the time working out. And so because, like, that's the lens through which they see their own lives and their own goals, you know, when you come along with your next great big idea, that's the attitude that's the response you're going to get. Because again, that's just the way, that's the internal track that plays in their minds as it applies to their own lives. So they're kind of going to project that onto you as well. Another reason for negativity is when people have become like jaded or cynic. And usually this is like a function of like their own life experiences that kind of have now told them that things are not possible. And usually these people are like former dreamers. So they're former dreamers who, you know, have tried and failed essentially. And so when you come to them and you're telling them about your ideas, they're seeing you through the lens of their own experiences of failure or of things not working out. And so sometimes what they're actually just doing is they're partly warning you. So they're kind of preempting things going wrong and warning you about the things that could go wrong. And they're kind of like speaking through you to themselves. It's almost as though you could be anybody. And they're not even necessarily seeing the particulars of your own situation and the differences in your own situation to theirs. It's like they're speaking to a mirror, they're speaking to themselves. So it's not even about you. It's not a reflection of the planning you've put into your idea or like the achievability of your goals. That's irrelevant because they're seeing themselves in you and they're kind of just projecting their own experiences that have made them jaded onto you. And an example, like an everyday example of this, is when people have been like jaded by love. So when they've like loved and lost and it's been like a bitter loss of love, they often are very negative about relationships. So they'll say things like all men are trash, or all women are trash, or all women are this way, or all and are that way. They universalize their own unique experiences. And so when you come to them with your brand new happy relationship and you're talking about the virtues of your relationship, they're the kind of person who tells you, oh, like, don't get too happy now. Like, be careful because things are going to go wrong sooner or later, because that's how they view human nature. That's how they view the nature of love. Or another example is when people have failed in business, when they have lost like everything in business, they saved up, they put their life savings into something, and then it goes wrong. So think of the people, for example, who lost everything during the last financial crisis, who didn't have any savings to fall back on. That was like their life savings. They had quit their day job. They had made their dream like their main focus, and things didn't work out. And when it didn't work out, the consequences were dire. Maybe they didn't just lose their business and their income, and therefore their capacity to support themselves and their families. Maybe they also consequently lost their home, or they ended up going into debt, or they ended up losing social standing, or feeling like they carried this burden of failure on their shoulders going forward. Like, that kind of person who's gone through what, you know, I consider kind of a traumatic experience. It's very traumatic losing everything in that way. But these people are going to view your motivations and ambitions and goals through the bitterness that colors their own perspective, having been people who have lost something big, whether it's in love or it's in business or in some other avenues. So they're simply jaded or have become cynical because of their own negative experiences. And that clouds their judgment and clouds their capacity to sort of separate their own personal experiences from what you are saying or presenting or hoping for in the here and now. The other reason for people being like negative, and when I say negative, I don't mean like people giving you like things to consider. Like, let's say you say, hey, I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and they say, oh, make sure you have considered the risks, make sure you're in shape and you get, you know, your doctor to sign off on your health, make sure you have all the right jabs, make sure you have a phone and you have safety. That's not being negative necessarily. That's somebody who is giving you ideas on things to consider. Negative is usually people who like smack down your ideas or smack down your ambitions without contributing to making them better. When the person is giving you advice on the things to consider, they're trying to make your idea better. So I don't necessarily consider that as being negative. So going back to things that actually are negative and why that is sometimes people are just like projecting their own limitations onto you. So the truth is that most people are capable of many things, of many great things. But for whatever reason, whether it's low confidence or negative experiences or self-doubt, not all people believe they can achieve those things. And so when they don't believe they can achieve those things, they project their own sense of limitations onto you. And they're not necessarily doing it maliciously, as I said. We see life as we are. And so if we feel that we couldn't do X, Y, and Z, our de facto position or our viewpoint or our perspective is that other people therefore can't achieve things. So we're literally just projecting our own experiences and self-belief or lack thereof onto other people. Now, the final reason I'll talk about here about why people can behave or respond negatively when you're coming up to them, you know, with your ideas or hopes or goals, is sometimes people just don't actually like you. Like, you think they like you, but they're not that into you, or they're jealous or envious of you for whatever reason. And sometimes this can be really confusing, because you would assume that people who don't like us would like cut us out of their lives. They would stay away from us. They would communicate to us, whether directly or indirectly, that they don't like us. They don't want to spend time with us. They don't invite us to their birthdays. They don't invite us to their events. But sadly, that's not the case. Like, you will have many situations where you will have like relationships, friendships with people who you think like you. And then it isn't until you present like a goal or an ambition or an accomplishment, that you come to realize that actually the person doesn't like you. And what you then come to realize is that actually sometimes people can tolerate being friends with you. And even like on occasion or sometimes or even most of the time, enjoy your company whilst like simultaneously not really liking you. And for me, at least, like the older I get, I feel like the test of whether somebody likes you, outside like other just green flags you should look out for, like being there for you, being supportive of you, like not doing you dirty or showing you the appropriate level of respect and kindness and consideration, outside just those regular green flags, I feel like a really good test is to what extent somebody wishes you well, even when it puts you, like the thing that you're doing or the accomplishments that you're going to get puts you in like a better position, whether it's socially or financially or status-wise. If they can sort of still like you the same and treat you the same and still be the same kind, good, like friend, even when you're moving up in the world in whatever metric you use to assess that, then you kind of know that's a good egg. But I think the thing that's really important to remember with, whether it's like with our friends or family or just like people who come into our lives, is that people are incredibly complex and often like lack a level of self-awareness. And that's why they'll often act in ways that are like confusing or irrational. So, for example, somebody might like you but still not wish you well or not wish for you to do better than them. So this is a person who has like a scarcity mindset, who believes that you getting ahead means that they won't. So they feel like things or resources or accomplishments or winning, quote unquote, is finite and there's only a limited supply. And so that if you get some success, it means that they won't get success, which is completely irrational and obviously not true. Another complexity in human nature or people is that sometimes people like you, but also enjoy like being superior to you. So like when you think about relationships and like whether platonic or romantic or whatever it is, like people play a role in that relationship. And the reason why the relationship stays as it is because people continue to play those roles. And so sometimes the role that you play might not necessarily be a flattering role. Like in the person's mind, you might be, for example, like the lovable but like underachieving friend who makes them feel accomplished or good about themselves. And so when that is threatened by you getting ahead in whatever metric you use to assess that, whatever metric is important to the both of you, the other person might feel threatened because their position or their role in the relationship is being challenged. And also what they're getting from that relationship with you, namely feeling superior to you, is going to go away. And so when they respond negatively or ambivalently, sometimes it's a function of the fact that like what you are about to do or have done reveals like their true motivation for being in the relationship, or challenges their self-identity in relation to you in a way where they find it intolerable. Like where I've seen this actually play out in sort of an ugly way is when you consider the relationship between feeders and the person who's fed. So a feeder is somebody who is typically slim or within a healthy weight bracket. And you see this in couples a lot, and you also see this in like a parent-child dynamic. So the feeder, whether it's a parent or a partner, will often be slim and be in good health, at least in relative terms. But they will have like a child or a partner who they feed constantly, like to an unhealthy level, to a degree or a point where the amount of food or the quantity of food they're feeding their quote-unquote loved ones is literally detrimental to their health. So if you've ever watched shows like extreme weight loss shows, or you ever watched like my 500 pound life, it's basically shows that chronicle people who are like morbidly obese, like very overweight people. And the sorts of relationships you see, like the overweight people have, and often they're sick and they're in hospital, and the reason why they need to do something about their weight is because it's gone to the point where their lives are at stake. And you'll get this curious situation where the person who supposedly loves them, whether it's a parent or a sibling or a lover, like, doesn't want them to lose weight. Like, they know it's literally risking their lives, but when the person starts to lose weight, the thin person or the feeder is unhappy. And I've thought about, like, the dynamics of that pathological relationship. And what I can only assume is that, one, they've gotten into the habit, or they've established a relationship based on a particular, like, power relation. Like, the person who needs to feel needed and the person who needs to be helped. And they basically, like, often fear that when the person loses weight, they're going to gain their independence and therefore not need them. So, like, their desire to feel needed over, like, supersedes their desire to even see their loved ones, like, healthy and have longevity in their lives. So that's how deeply irrational and, like, complex. And outside sort of feeling needed, because that's, like, a relatively, like, innocent emotion, sometimes people also enjoy just feeling superior to you. And so the reason why they don't want to see the person, like, lose weight is because in some perverse kind of way, they kind of enjoy feeling like they are in control, they are healthier, they are more disciplined, like, insert whatever adjective they get off on. But that pattern of relation with the person who is overweight and needs to get healthy for their health, like, they enjoy that dynamic to the detriment of the person who is unwell. Another thing that's important to remember, like, when it comes to the complexity of people, is that, like, people are social chameleons. And what will happen is that they will show you kind of, like, what you need to see. Another way of saying that is that, like, you never really truly know people, because ultimately their internal world, so, like, what they think, what they feel, the thoughts they have about you, the thoughts they have about their relationship, how they see themselves in the world and their position, that is ultimately only ever going to be known by them. And even when they tell us how they feel, we can never truly be sure that's truly how they feel. Sometimes, to make matters even worse, they're not even aware in a meaningful way of their own emotions. So sometimes people are driven by envy and they don't know where that envy is coming from, or they're driven by need and they don't know where that need is coming from. So not only will they not, or do they not have to tell us what they think, sometimes they don't even know what they think and why they think that way. And because of that internal world that is inaccessible to us, what's going to happen is they're just going to show us, like, what we need to see in order for us to continue that relationship with them. So they might perform consideration, they might perform friendship, they might perform camaraderie, etc. But they may feel completely different internally for a multitude of reasons. One of the things I often think about, like, in terms of assuming your friends are your friends, or being deceived, I guess, by the way people respond to you externally whilst they simultaneously have different thoughts internally, is I often think about the case of Shanquella Robinson. And I kind of feel like I've spoken about her in one of my very, very early episodes. But in case you don't know about the story, it's something that happened in real life. It's about this young woman, I think she was 25 at the time that she was killed. And she owned her own business and she was doing very well financially, especially for, like, somebody in their mid-20s. Like, she was doing very well, earning good money. I forget what her business was, but it's on social media somewhere. So she planned a birthday for her 25th birthday. So she was 24. She had just turned 25. She planned a birthday party and she wanted to go to Mexico with five of her closest friends. So what she does is she basically pays for the trip. She pays for the resort where they were staying. And it's a really snazzy place. It's a place where, like, lots of celebrities have gone there. I think one of the people who have gone there is Jennifer Aniston, amongst others. But when they arrive at this villa in Mexico, within 48 hours of arriving, one of her so-called friends has beaten her to death. And the others, at the moment of her killing, of her death, were recording the whole thing. They're recording the whole thing, not intervening, even egging on the attacker. And then after her passing, after she died from her injuries, the five pack up and they leave the next day. They leave her body behind. They call her mother and they lie to her. They say that Shanquilla is sick, that she's consumed too much alcohol and she has alcohol poisoning. And thank God for like a mother's discernment, because she knew her daughter doesn't drink a lot. And even like on the trip, because Shanquilla Robinson had been like chronicling like some of like the trip on social media, clearly she was not inebriated in any of the shots. She was drinking very lightly. Now, what emerged from that is that the friend, quote unquote, the person who beat her, clearly was not her friend and was very envious of her. Like, she didn't actually like her. Like, she was happy to like go on an expenses paid trip to Mexico. She was happy to like be in Shanquilla's presence and use her money. And even previous to that, they obviously interacted socially. That's why presumably Shanquilla was comfortable like inviting her and flying with her to a different country. And so Shanquilla, assuming she's a rational, typical young woman, like probably was looking at these people and could assess based on how they're performing that they liked her. They liked her enough to get on a plane with her. They liked her enough to agree to spend a number of days in another country. They liked her enough to like come and celebrate her 25th birthday with her. So it's not that she lacked discernment, it's that they were clearly performing what they had to perform in order to stay in a relationship with her. And I can only assume that if she was this financially generous with her friends on her birthday, that she was generally somebody who was financially generous with her friends. And maybe that's the reason why these people like wanted to pretend to be her friend and wanted to continue to pretend to like her, to continue to reap the benefits of her friendship. So that's an example of the irrational and really sinister ways in which people can act when they are threatened by you in whatever way, for whatever reason, or are envious of you. And actually, this reminds me of my sister, would she mind me telling the story? Do you know what? I'm going to get her consent first before I tell the story. But outside that extreme example, there are other everyday like reminders of this fact, the reminders of the idea that people can perform friendship with you, can perform like liking you whilst also doing things that show you that they don't actually feel that same way. So think, or if not don't like you, they in some areas don't wish you well. So think of an example where you say you're quitting smoking, and then because you've said that you're quitting smoking, suddenly the friends who are smokers and are addicted to smoking feel threatened by the idea that you might become free of smoking. You might escape that addiction. And because they don't want to be left alone in that addiction, they can basically sort of try and sabotage you. So they'll offer you cigarettes, or they'll wait until you're inebriated and then offer you a cigarette when your will is weak, or they'll smoke around you even though they know you're trying to quit. So that's like a micro example of people acting in ways that aren't supportive because they feel threatened by what you are doing, even when it's something that is like a health benefit to you and doesn't affect them in any way. Another everyday example is like when you're trying to lose weight. So you're trying to lose weight and you announce it to your friendship circle, and then there'll be maybe somebody who like tries to tempt you to eat instead of supporting you and like only inviting you to healthy food places or like encouraging you on your weight loss journey. Because they also have a food addiction and they don't want to be left in that addiction alone, they can end up sabotaging you in ways that they don't even realize they're doing. Like they don't consciously know they're doing it, but that is where it's coming from. They feel threatened by the idea that you won't share that addiction or that vice with them, and that you might look upon them like they're not as good as you because you've managed to lose the weight. So the irrational response is that they'll start to do things that sabotage your weight loss, like inviting you to go to like fast food places or bring junk food around you, or if you live with them, like amping up the amount of junk food that they buy. And again, I don't even necessarily think that this is always coming from a malicious place. I don't think people are consciously doing things like these types of small micro things consciously. It's often coming from a sense of fear that they're going to be left behind, or a sense of fear that you're going to be superior to them, or also like a sense of envy that you've managed to do something that they are struggling to accomplish or achieve themselves. And sometimes sabotage as well, by the way, doesn't just come in those active forms, like the forms where somebody's like trying to like tempt you with alcohol or like food or cigarettes when you're trying to quit those things. It can also be in a very passive aggressive way or a very indirect way. So think of a situation where you are getting married. You're getting married, your partner's proposed to you, it's a great time. And then the people who feel envious of that, maybe because their relationship isn't at that stage yet, or maybe they're not in a relationship and they want to be, because they feel threatened or envious or jealous of the fact that you are getting married and you're doing something they also want for themselves, an example of passive aggressive like sabotage is when they suddenly disappear from your life. So you have made them like they're the maid of honor, but now like the friend you talk to every other day or like multiple times a week, all of a sudden are like neglecting their maid of honor duties. They're not doing the things they're supposed to do. They're kind of creating situations and situations where elements of the wedding might go wrong. So maybe they don't pick up your dress, or they fail to show up to an important like rehearsal, even though they're typically a person who's very reliable. So that's like an example of somebody behaving in like a passive aggressive or covert way of sabotaging you. I started thinking about this subject actually because my dad gave me advice just the other day. And, you know, my dad can be very dramatic in the advice that he gives. And sometimes it's literally out of the blue, like coming from nowhere. And so I was on a call with my siblings and my dad, and I don't know why we started talking about this, but the advice he said you are alone. Like he was talking in relation to like expecting people to validate your ideas or to support your ideas or to be encouraging of your ideas. He said, you are alone. You're born alone. You're going to die alone. And whilst people, of course, are going to come into your life and be part of your journey, be part of some of your journey in life, you shouldn't be overly reliant on them, because ultimately it deceives you into thinking that you are connected or that they are forever friends, when the truth is that we're all on independent journeys, and there's no guarantee that the people who are in our lives today are going to be people who will last in our lives for a multitude of reasons. And so it's good to sort of build that inner resilience where you don't need people's validation in that way. And for context, you know, my dad is somebody who like is really a big proponent of the idea that you can achieve anything you set your mind to. So like growing up, going to school, like every day he dropped us to school, like in primary school, and he would play the song by Nas called I Know I Can, and he would like blast it out of the car. Like everybody would hear us coming from a mile away. But the song basically says exactly that. It says, I know I can achieve what I want to be. So it was like deeply ingrained in us to not have like limitations in that way, to assume that things are going to work out, that you can do things, and to like give things like the good old try. So he believes that, he has ingrained that in us, and it's actually a really nice thing, because I kind of see that reflected in my attitude towards conflict and to overcoming difficult situations. I would say I'm definitely somebody who like naturally backs myself and kind of most of the time kind of get my way, because I'll fight to the death essentially. But he also is somebody who's been very jaded. So I know that the message he's giving is coming from life experience. And my dad has had the experience where he has gone into business with a very close friend. He went into business with him in, I think it was in Zimbabwe or Zambia. And he basically had like a handful of shops and like this taxi business. I don't know if you've ever been to an African country or you're from an African country, you'll know they have in some countries like combis. And they're basically like these bigger than a minivan, where you can crowd in a whole bunch of people. You can fit in like 20, 30 people. And usually it's like a 10 seater. So like people are very squashed. But anyway, he had like a few of those as well. Long story short, they go into business together, and for whatever reason, things go sour, like the relationship goes sour. And what his business associate ends up doing, who wasn't just a business associate, he was actually a very, very close friend who he helped a lot in the past. And this friend ends up burning down his businesses. I remember the day like it was yesterday. He called me and it must have been the weekend because this was before COVID and this is before we worked from home. Like now it's like typical, everybody works from home, but this is before working from home era. So it must have been on the weekend. And he calls me and he says all his businesses, like all his businesses, only his businesses have set on fire. And actually, in fact, it definitely was in Zimbabwe because it was in Harare. So he says they've been burnt down and he basically is asking me to help him with something. Now, years later, I pieced together more information and he recently told me like who did it and why they did it. And I was so shocked. I kind of couldn't believe that people would do something so vengeful and so dangerous, because people could have been killed in the fire as well. So anyway, his advice is coming through that lens. And I have to say, I've also had experiences where when he gave me that piece of advice, it really resonated with me, because I've had similar, not as extreme as that, but I've had other experiences where I have had friends who turned out not to wish me well, and turned out when I really assessed the relationship, I can only assume they never really were my friend. An example of this is when I was like a teenager, I used to have like this friend who I hung out with like 4 out of like 7 days out of the week. You know, most days after school we'd be together, like whenever we did anything naughty, quote unquote, like mitching off school, which I've only done like a handful of times, but she would be my partner in crime essentially. So over time, like when we were like 15, 16, around that age, she started to develop a bad like reputation sexually at school. And background is she came from like a very difficult home life, and she clearly got validation from like boys. And after one particularly bad event, I mean, I wasn't there, but what happened was that she ended up being taken advantage of. I mean, she would say that she consented to doing the stuff, but in the context of her being a teenager and clearly being somebody who's vulnerable, given what her home life was like, and given the fact that she clearly used like doing sexual stuff with boys because it gave her validation, I would say that she was taken advantage of. So anyway, long story short, she ended up doing stuff with 5 boys from school. And what happened after she was with these boys, it was like in a field somewhere. After this happened, like people were incredibly cruel to her, specifically like boys. Like they would leer at her in the hallways. They would jeer nasty names at her. Or other times they would like befriend her. So they would be like really nice to her, really friendly with her, all with a view of basically like using her. And they would often, actually all the time, like break up with her. So anyway, long story short, she became kind of plagued by this reputation. And what happened in relation to me was that I kind of noticed after a while that she started trying to peer pressure me into doing sexual stuff with boys. So FYI, like back then, like where I grew up in like a relatively rural part of Ireland, I would say, where there was like one of everything, like one shop, one bar, like no nightlife, like no clubs, there was no cinemas, there's no like crazy golf or any sort of like the wholesome activities that we have now. And the nearest town was like an hour away to go and do something like that, like to go to the cinema. Actually, even back then, the cinema that we have an hour away wasn't there yet. So basically like people's like pastimes was drinking, like drinking in people's houses, drinking in fields, drinking under bridges, basically just drinking everywhere. Because again, like we were too young to be able to go to clubs in the city center. And on top of that, there wasn't any other thing to do or any other wholesome activities to do. So on one particular occasion, we were in like somebody's house. I actually remember the name of the guy's like name, like first name and surname, but he was a nice guy. It wasn't about him. So we're at his house having a party. It was like 20, 30 people at the house. His parents were out, as they often were. And this boy, actually, I would even say older than a boy, I would say guy, he was relatively older than everybody else in the crowd. So let's say the average age was like 16, 17, he would have been like 20, 21. So we're having a good time, we're drinking, we're playing games, and he starts to like ply me with alcohol. Like he's pouring me drink after drink, and he's kind of like insisting that I drink it, not in like an aggressive way, not in a sort of like nasty way, but in a way where somebody has a smile on their face, but in their eyes you can tell that they really want you to do that thing. And so for me, like, I am somebody who has like an internal second eye, or like an internal awareness, especially when I feel unsafe, or especially when I'm around people who I'm not like 100% comfortable or like 100% at ease with. So the only time I would like be completely off, like my mind would be off, is with like my family, like with my siblings. So I'm out with my siblings. It doesn't mean that I cede all awareness, but I'm just a lot more relaxed. So I might get like way more drunk than I would with friends. With friends, like 9 times out of 10, I'm aware. And in this particular evening, because I had observed, and sometimes people think I'm more drunk than I actually am, I've got a very high tolerance. And so they thought, because I was being merry and silly, that I was drunker than I actually was. So he is pouring drinks down my throat, but in my head, I'm like, uh-oh, like something ain't right with this man. He's clearly trying to get you drunk. Like automatically, I was on high alert. And I didn't show this externally, but internally, I was observing the situation thinking like, this is not a safe person. And he clearly is trying to take advantage of me. Later on, as the evening progresses, like my friend, quote unquote, like, comes and is standing and drinking with me and the guy. And the guy at this point is trying to like cajole me into going upstairs with him. Like he's kind of like saying we should go upstairs. He's kind of like trying to like guide me upstairs gently. And I'm like resisting. I'm like joking and sort of like trying to make light of it. But I'm clearly like saying, no, I'm not going upstairs. So this friend is with us now. And she legit like takes my arm, is taking my arm, and she's trying to like pull me up the stairs, essentially, initially gently, but then I like sense her like urgency, or her like desperation to get me to go upstairs with this guy who's like 4 or 5 years older than us, who I have literally no interest in, who I've never met before this evening, and who clearly intends to take sexual advantage of me. Now, I got out of this situation eventually by pretending I was going to get another drink and then just leaving, but it really taught me an important lesson about the degree to which people will go to make themselves feel better about something. Like with that benefit of hindsight, being a bit older, I can now understand that what my friend, quote unquote, was trying to do was that she was trying to equalize the playing field, if you will. Like she had like developed this reputation by the boys who took advantage of her and took advantage of her need for validation and her need to be loved or cared for. And because of that, basically her reputation was shot. And she basically hoped by me going upstairs with him and doing stuff with him and people being witness to that, that I too would get a bad reputation. And then we would be on a similar or on the same level. Now, I think her actions were particularly heinous because she knew I didn't do stuff like that. Like she knew I honestly wasn't into guys at all. Like I had one crush on this guy called Tom, and unless you were gonna like roll in Tom and be like, you know, here's Tom, I had no interest whatsoever. Like every time we'd gone out, I didn't do stuff. I didn't allow people to go near me. Like I had fun with them. I joked with them. I drank with them. I had fun. But my curfew up until I was like 17 was 6 p.m. So it wasn't that she thought that I was interested in that guy. Like she knew I wasn't, because I never was interested in guys. I wasn't interested in doing stuff like that. Although I did play spin the bottle. So I had done that. But outside of that, she knew 100% I didn't want that. So she was willing to put me in a situation that would literally cause me harm, because she knew that I didn't want to go upstairs and therefore I wasn't consenting. But she was willing to be part of what could have been a very dangerous situation for me. So when it comes to like jealousy, or comes to people, like seeing signs that people don't wish you well, I have to say, like, nothing repulses me or makes me like retreat or retract from people more than when I have like confirmed information like that, that they don't wish me well or that they wish me harm specifically. And I also think like a particularly killer combination or dangerous combination in people in terms of like vices is when they are both insecure and jealous, because both those emotions drive people to do the most like irrational, like malicious, vengeful things. Like either in the case of like my dad and his business associate, or like me and like my former like childhood friend, it drives people to really do ugly things, because jealousy is like a very ugly emotion. Like some emotions are like vulnerable emotions, like somebody feeling unloved, like that is a sad emotion. It's a vulnerable emotion. I don't know if it necessarily drives people to do bad things. It might cause them to engage in self-destructive behavior, but I don't know if it drives like vengeful action. Or another emotion that is not necessarily a good emotion, but isn't necessarily a dangerous one by itself, is when people are like selfish. Like selfish is not a nice emotion, but most of the time selfishness means that the person is self-focused. So they might not show you consideration or thoughtfulness or think about you and what is good for you, but because they're so self-focused, most of the time you can be left alone, or the harm that comes to you is sort of like incidental. It's a consequence of their selfishness as opposed to their actions being directed towards making your life worse. At least that's my interpretation. Whereas jealousy combined with insecurity or low self-confidence or limiting beliefs about themselves, that can cause people to try and bring you down a peg, which is, I think, what was happening with my former friend and my dad's former friend as well. And the thing that really gets me about like this type of irrational behavior is exactly the fact that it's irrational. Like when somebody, like sometimes people think that taking something away from you is going to result in them getting that thing. But of course, like that's not necessarily the case. So in the example with my dad, like his former friend burning down his businesses is not going to result in the friend finding success in his business. Or in my example, my friend trying to pimp me out essentially, or turn me out essentially, wouldn't have erased her own bad reputation or the shame that she felt with, like, along with that reputation. In other contexts, like let's say like a friend is envious that you are getting married, and because of their jealousy, they're trying to sabotage your wedding. That's not going to result in them getting a proposal. Or let's say in a work context, you get a promotion and a colleague of yours is jealous. Like them trying to undermine you because of that jealousy isn't going to communicate to leadership or make leadership give you a promotion. So it's completely, completely irrational. Now, going back to the subject matter of this episode on moving in silence, there's obviously a number of benefits of moving in silence in this context, because it ultimately prevents you or protects you from people who are either insecure or jealous or have other negative emotions when it comes to your goals or your successes. And some of the things to do that I, you know, trying to be more robust about implementing in my life is like only share things when they are actually completed. Like, and because when you share things when they've already done, then there's no opportunity or there's a limited opportunity for people to interfere or to sabotage or to discourage you in your goals or in your objectives. Another thing is to like only share with people who are like 100 miles ahead of you in whatever you're trying to achieve, as well as people who have like also ideally expressed like some kind of desire to help you in the past. And the reason why is because if they're 100 miles ahead of you, then they're not going to feel threatened by you, or they're less likely to feel threatened by you. Because why should they when they've already achieved that thing themselves times 10 or times 100? So an example of this is like don't share your weight loss plans with your friend who is overweight, as clearly they've got a food addiction and negative emotions around food and stuff. So the chances that they respond positively or are able to provide you with the kind of support that you need is very low. Or if you share your plans or limited progress at quitting smoking with like a smoker who's addicted to cigarettes or addicted to nicotine, the chances that they can offer you like support or guidance or advice, it's very limited because they themselves are in the throes of addiction. So there's no point sharing that with them. Whereas if you shared it with somebody who quit smoking like 5 years ago, that would be obviously of much more significant value to you because they can give you practical advice from their own experiences. And they also don't feel challenged or threatened by the fact that you are trying to get healthier because they've already accomplished that themselves. So there's no insecurity there. Another thing I've learned is like, just don't brag about your accomplishments. And this includes like humble brags. Now, an example of humble brag is like sharing things on social media that aren't phrased as like, hey, look at me, or, you know, isn't this cool that I have done? You know, most of the times people, when they're humble bragging, don't say this, but they will do things like they'll share a picture and say, you know, or a picture of like their keys to their house. And they'll say like, oh, I'm just so happy I just bought my first house. Or they'll talk about like their new, or post about their new higher income job, or the fact that they just got promoted. All of these are positioned as sort of like, hey, I'm just letting you know this great thing has happened in my life. But to me, a lot of the time, it feels a little bit like it's a humble brag. And more often than not, it's received by people in that way. If you've ever been on LinkedIn, like you see this on LinkedIn all the time, like people will say things about the new jobs they've like gotten. And I don't know if their network cares in that way. And even if they do care, it often doesn't come across as subtle as the poster think it's coming across. Connected to what I said about only sharing things with people who are like 100 miles ahead of you in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, like the flip side of that is also like, don't share your accomplishments with people who have less than you. So if you get like a new job with like a salary of like £80,000 or $80,000 or whatever a high salary is for your city or your country, like don't tell your friend who's on like £25,000 or $25,000 or whatever the currency is, because obviously you have to use discernment, and discernment would tell you that chances are they're going to feel some kind of way about the fact that you've got a significantly higher wage than them, because it highlights how they're behind. It highlights the disparity. And sometimes people can't control the level of envy or jealousy they feel when they feel left behind by somebody they started on an equal level or equal footing as. And that's true, by the way, even when they are like lovely, good, kind people, like it can still make them feel envious or still make them feel inferior. And on top of that, and on top of like you instigating this feeling in them, like it's also not necessarily kind. It feels braggadocious. Like, what's the point? That's like going up to like a homeless person and like showing them your bank account or showing them like your tenancy agreement. Like there's no need, and it's only going to result in them seeing you through a negative lens or feeling envious of you, because again, it feels like the only natural outcome. It's unlikely they're going to high five you and say, hey, that's great for you, especially because you're not offering to help them. Another like thing I'll say is, I connected to what I just said, is I don't even feel like you should share your successes unless like you intend to share it. So Trevor Noah, who I really, really like, he used to host The Daily Show. And he also wrote this book called Born a Crime, which is a great read. And he talks about the idea that like where he came from, it was very important to him, which being South Africa, it was very important to him because he grew up in like a relatively poor neighborhood and area and amongst like people who came from like a lower socioeconomic background. It was very important to him that he shared his successes with them for a number of reasons, but the central reason was that he was aware that he had seen other examples of when people had succeeded, and they succeeded in I terms, like, I have succeeded. Like, they didn't share their successes with the people around them. And what happened over time is that people started to see them as a target. So it's like, visually speaking, like, imagine a row of houses in like a very poor neighborhood, in which the houses are all dilapidated, like the windows are like not in a good shape, the paint is peeling, maybe like their gardens look just imagine like a poor road. And then there's like one house at the end of that row that is like a palace. It's like 4 stories tall. It's got like a lavish green, well manicured garden with like flamingos. It's got like help at the door, at the gates. It's got security at the gate, you know, maids come in and out, like from the street people can peer inside and see that the owner lives like a lavish lifestyle. Like, the only natural outcome is that that house is going to be robbed. Like, that house is going to be a target from the people around them, because, again, not only is it sort of like showing off or being braggadocious in their wealth or being obscene in their wealth, it's also not being shared amongst the people around him. So he learned very early on that if he being Trevor Noah, that if he didn't share his successes with the people around him, that eventually he would become a target. Because when people can't share in your successes and therefore can't share in your joy, that's kind of what happens. They start to develop negative feelings about your success, negative feelings about the things you've accomplished, because they're not getting any crumbs off your table. They're not benefiting from your success. And so to shield yourself from that, like, you should just share those things. And if you don't want to share those things, then one of the best ways to protect yourself, not only from like the evil eye or from like envious behavior, but also from people just like not wishing you well and maybe even targeting you, it's to keep it a secret. So keep it a secret. And if you don't want to keep it a secret, then you should share. Another example is like, let's say at work you win like a really juicy bonus. Let's say like at work you get like a 10,000 pound or a 10,000 euro or $10,000 bonus. So you call your family and you tell them about the good news. You know, you're like, hey guys, I've gotten 10,000 pounds, $10,000. They're going to be very excited and happy for you. Like, it's a huge sum of money, especially if you come from like a background where that kind of money as like a bonus, not even being your salary, just like a bonus, is unheard of. They're going to be super hyped and super excited. But that's only the short-term immediate response. What happens after the excitement for you wears off is that the introduction of this new subject, the idea that somebody, one person, has like gained like this huge like bonus of 10,000 pounds, $10,000 or whatever, they're going to start thinking about their own financial situation. They're going to think about the fact that they're in debt, or they owe money, or they're in the red, or they're facing financial strain, or they just don't have as much money as you. And then they're going to start thinking about your money and you in a not so positive way, in a way where they probably want you to offer to help them. So either they'll just be like straight out, like just have a hand out, like have their hands out and ask you for money, or say they need a loan, or find some way of gaining access to your money, or they'll silently resent you. And actually, to be honest, like, that's a more dangerous emotion, like silent resentment, because it's much more covert and you don't know that people have negative feelings towards you. Long story short, you can bypass all of that by sharing your money or not saying anything. I think the wider goal, though, or the wider message, is just exactly like what my dad said. Maybe not in like so pessimistic terms, but it's being like the key or the answer is to be self-reliant. Because even when you make that phone call and you're like, oh my God, guess what, guys? I just got this bonus of 10,000 pounds. Or, oh my God, guess what, guys? I just got this promotion. Or I just bought this house. Or I just lost. Whatever the great news is, is you're doing it because you want validation. You want people to be happy for you, excited for you, to jump for joy for you, to like be impressed by you. You're still seeking external validation. It's a reflection of the fact that you need external validation, because otherwise there's no real need to tell them unless it implicates them or impacts them in some way. And this is also true when we're not sharing like things we've achieved, but also sharing like goals that we have or objectives or aspirations or dreams that we have. We're really only sharing them to kind of get the validation that our ideas are good, or put another way, we're trying to gauge from others how we should feel about our goals, like that it's a good goal to have, it's a good plan to have, it's a good dream to have. And really, we should just trust our own judgment. Like, we are the ones who have access to our internal thoughts and dialogues. We know what we are capable of in a way that other people will never know. We determine our own level of self-belief. And so we really shouldn't sort of need to rely on others to create that validation for us, or to give us that confirmation that what we're doing is a good, positive thing that is going to be successful or going to be achievable. And I think with that attitude shift, then whether somebody is like positive, which is great, or ambivalent, or negative, it's really not going to touch us, because one, we're not going to be in those positions because we haven't shared things before they're done anyway. And even when we do share things we have accomplished, we're not doing it in a braggadocious way. We're only doing it when it's relevant or significant or implicates the other person. But it also means that we're kind of like shielded from being so externally driven by other people's emotional responses to us, you know? And like, ultimately, our ideas and thoughts and dreams shouldn't be so fragile that the ambivalent response of somebody we like or care about, or the negative response of somebody we care or love, affects how we feel about our own aspirations and goals or dreams. Like, that's a very like vulnerable position to be in. And we kind of insulate ourselves from that vulnerability by just like not sharing things, by sharing things if we have to when they're accomplished, and then also by keeping at the forefront, or at the very least, you know, at the back of our minds, the fact that people have their own limitations, and we should try and protect our own, like, especially when things are precious to us, we should protect our precious dreams from the unpredictable gazes or lenses of the people around us. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up this week's episode. I really hope you liked the episode. If you did, I would really appreciate if you left me a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and I'll catch you in the next episode.